We look forward to hearing from Brother Greg at this time.
Brother Greg.
It's very good to be here, brethren, and to be with you all and to see the faces of the brethren from the Prince Albert area and the brethren that have traveled from other more distant places that we know and appreciate seeing. And we also want to express our thanks for the hospitality of Ben and Sue and Adam and Helen for all that they're doing for us while we're staying with the brethren. We do really appreciate that very much. Brethren, our topic today is two questions on the millennium. And it's always good to know what the purpose of the talk is going to be and what might have led to deciding upon that topic. And here we have a topic called Two Questions on the Millennium. And it seems to tell us, obviously, that the one who is doing the presentation, namely myself, has had some questions which I wanted to have clarified in my own mind, because there are many things in the truth that we do want to clear up, things that we have studied in the past that we remember in general, but we forget some of the details, and we really sometimes need to look more carefully at certain things to understand them better and more clearly. And this topic today, Two Questions on the Millennium, came about as a result of some of our studies in Winnipeg, our Sunday studies, our Thursday studies, and things that I was thinking to myself, I need to clear that up in my mind so I can understand that a little bit better, because they seem to be very important questions, things that the pastor has presented from the volume, certain statements that, sure, you read over from time to time and from year to year, but you haven't really stopped there at the red light, and you haven't really said to yourself, have I understood that, really? Or has it been a general part of the study, and we've gone on with the main ideas, and I'm happy with that? So I think we need to sometimes pursue a certain strategy in our studies, and that is to stop at the questions that we have in our own minds, and then to study out those questions that we have in our own minds to help clear them up. And really, we should really be developing quite a few questions, because there are so many things. As we came to the convention here today, driving with Brother Wayne in the car, and Sister Joanna and my daughter Ellen, we're talking about things, and I'm thinking as we're talking, gee, I got to look more into that, and gee, I forget about that a bit, and gee, I wish I could sort of remember all those details that, and all these questions are flooding into the mind, and I better write that down so I remember to study that, because, you know, there's so many questions to ask and to clarify. And this topic will be clarifying two questions on the millennium that I had in my own mind. One of them with regard to the beginning of the millennium, and one of them with regard to the end of the millennium. And things you'll find familiar, things you may think, oh, I better think a little more about that point because I really haven't given it enough thought. And of course, there will be embellishments and things that could be elaborated on that I won't elaborate on because there isn't time. And as I was preparing these two questions, I was thinking there's other questions that came out of these two questions, namely things regarding the three harvests and things of that nature, but you can think about that later. But so we'll get into our discourse today, brethren, and see if we can appreciate these two questions on the millennium. First of all, brethren, we start off with Volume 1, page 10, paragraph 1, Studies in the Scriptures. And here's what it says. As though by instinct, the whole creation, while it groans and travails in pain, waits for, longs for, and hopes for the day, calling it the golden age. So the pastor is here referring to what the world is unwittingly waiting for, this golden age, what we would call this wonderful millennial age, in the morning of which we find ourselves, the day of restitution, the day of restoration. We find ourselves in this day. And by the way, brethren, in case you're wondering what the first question is, I'll make sure you're really clear on that when I get to the kernel of that question, but I'm just going to give you some warm-up to the question first. So the purpose of the discourse will not be to particularize all of the features of the millennial age. Certainly we can't do that. But rather to understand clearly understand when it began and when and how it will end. Now, of course, we might say we know when it began in 1874, but there was a little problem there, which we'll see in a moment. Now, the very fact that we have learned so much relative to the times of restitution of all things, admittedly, we have learned much regarding this time. Our Lord has served us these wonderful things. This in itself is strong proof that we are, in fact, in these times. And we can assent to Pastor Russell's observation when he says on page 10 of Volume 1, "It is the light from the Sun of Righteousness in this dawning of the millennial day that reveals these things as present truth, now to be appreciated by the sincere, the pure in heart." So this unfolding, understanding, is in itself a clear proof and indication that we are in this day, because God would help her early in the morning, the Blessed Church. God would help her early in the morning. So the Bible gives us all the information necessary to enable us to locate ourselves in this day of the Lord. Of course, this day of the Lord is the forepart of the millennial age, which we're going to be talking more about, including the fact that this day of the Lord, where we find ourselves in, is the forepart of the last 1,000 years. It's the forepart of the last 1,000 years of the seventh day. We read in Genesis 2:2, "And on the seventh day God ended his work which he made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made." And we'll be looking later, brethren, at how this seventh day, we find, started in 4126 and takes us all the way to 2874, which is 7,000 years, brethren. Noticing that 4126 to 1874 is 6,000 years. But God rested from all his work on the seventh day, starting from 4126 BC. And we'll get to our question in a minute, our first question. So we've studied at length that this last 1,000-year period began in 1874. That's the last 1,000 of that seventh day. And that 6,000 years prior to this date takes us back to 4126. And by the way, you all have a handout, brethren, which we'll be referring to later. The 6,000 years prior to this day takes us back to 4126 and the year of Adam's transgression. Notice, not the year of Adam's creation, the year of Adam's transgression. Hence, we've been given biblical proof that the seventh day is 7,000 years long, as are the other days which are in the creative process. Now, commenting on this, Pastor Russell says in Volume 6, page 19, "Although the length of these epoch days is not indicated, we will be justified in assuming that they were uniform periods because of their close identity as members of the one creative week. Hence, if we can gain reasonable proof of the length of one of these days, we will be fully justified in assuming that the others were of the same duration." Unquote. And brethren, it's clear from Bible chronology and from the law and from the prophets that the last or seventh day is 7,000 years long. We've been given all these things clearly in the volumes, and we have been given the proof from the scriptures. Bible chronology gives us our footing from the creation of Adam, and particularly his fall. The law and the prophets establish that the antitypical jubilee began in 1874, as well as other prophetic proofs, of course. And the prophetic utterances of our Lord through the Apostle John in the Revelation established the last 1,000-year period of this 7,000-year day. So we've been given all that information to help us understand clearly the chronology and the fact that we are now living in this last 1,000-year portion of the seventh day. Therefore, 48,000 years have elapsed from the beginning of the first creative day to 1874. And 49,000 years will have elapsed in the year 2874. The end of God's day of rest, when Christ shall turn the kingdom over to God. Now, again, we're getting to our question in a moment, brethren, but we need the background information here first. Now, just let us note incidentally, just to refresh our minds, that God has been pleased to illustrate grand climaxes in the divine plan by using cycles of 7 times 7, as we've learned in our studies of the Jubilees. Israel's day Sabbaths of 7 times 7, equaling 49 days and leading to and introducing the 50th day or Pentecost. That's one. Another, the year Sabbaths, 7 times 7, equaling 49 years, introducing the 50th or Jubilee year. Still another, the still larger Jubilee cycle of 50 times 50 years, marking the millennium as Earth's great Jubilee, shown by the Law and the Prophets to commence with the year 1874. And finally, this Sabbath or 7-day system on a still larger scale of 7 times 7,000 years, equaling 49,000 years, measuring the creative days of Genesis from the inception to perfection, ushering in the grand everlasting Jubilee, when God's work of earthly creation will be completed at the close of the millennial age, ushering in the ages to come, as we see in Ephesians 2:7, the ages to come. So we see these cycles and climaxes in the Scriptures clearly. Now, an important point for us to have clearly before our minds is the exact date of the last 7th portion of God's day of rest, and when that began. When that began. Now, when we say the last 7th, we mean the times of restitution, the millennium. The millennium of Christ's presence, inclusive of all its features and operations. For it is this millennium that will subdue all opposing power and authority prior to the transfer of the restored race to the Father. Now, we're getting close to the question. Pastor Russell clarifies this matter for us in the second volume. Let us follow his line of reasoning as he harmonizes the facts with the chronology, showing why 1874 and not 1872 is the beginning of the times of restitution. Because if we look at the chart, we can see that with the creation of Adam, 4128 BC, we go move along to 1874, there's a problem there. The chronology doesn't work. It's 2 years too long. And Brother Russell had a bit of a problem with that for a while, in terms of calling it a screw loose in the chronology. And this is the point of clarification that I wanted to think more carefully about, and just to understand how he was explaining this 2-year portion, not just in stating the fact that, yes, there were 2 years in the garden, but how to understand that in the years and in the harmonizing it exactly with the 7 creative days, and would it harmonize perfectly. And we'll get to that handout too in a minute, brethren. So we'll notice that Pastor Russell said in Volume 2 on page 363, paragraph 1, that, quote, we are already living in the 7th millennium since 1872, in October 1872. Well, that was the problem. And in my mind, well, the millennium, well, what do you mean the millennium? I know what the millennium is, but it was used in 2 contexts. I'll read that again and I'll go on with the explanation. He said, we are already living in the 7th millennium since October 1872. Now, that's unquote. Keep in mind the fact that Adam was created in 4128 BC. And that 4,128 years BC plus 1872 years AD does equal 6,000 years. It does equal that, as he showed in the volume. So the pastor was correct in saying that we have been living in the 7th millennium since October 1872. But we have to clarify that. But this does not mean the same thing as the great antitypical Jubilee, the times of restitution of all things, And that's what we want to get straight in our minds. For in the same paragraph, he says, the antitypical jubilee, the time's restitution of all things, had its beginning in the year 1874, when the presence of the great restorer was also due. Now the pastor explains in volume 3, page 127, paragraph 2, that, quote, this apparent inharmony of the date of the second advent with the beginning of the 7,000 years seemed at first sight to indicate a screw loose somewhere in the chronological reckoning. It'll be remembered that the reckoning of chronology began with the creation of Adam, and that some time was spent by Adam and Eve before sin entered, in the garden that is. Just how long we are not informed, but 2 years would not be an improbable estimate. We can scarcely imagine that a shorter time than 2 years elapsed in that sinless condition, and the interval between the close of the 6,000 years and the beginning of the time's restitution leads to the inference that the interval between the creation of Adam and the entrance of sin is not counted as a part of the 6 days of evil. And you can even see on the chart here, where 4126 is indicated on the chart, it's somewhat after the first line in the first dispensation, somewhat after the time Adam was created. 4126. The 6,000 years in which God has permitted evil to dominate the world prior to the beginning of the great seventh or sabbatic thousand or times of restitution date from the entrance of sin into the world. And that's also shown in the chart with 4126 to 1874 being 6,000 years. Not the creation, but the fall of sin, then the beginning of the reign of sin. So there's the 2 years. That's important for us to realize that Christ's millennial reign, or time's restitution of all things, begins with the date 1874 and not 1872. When he speaks of a millennium from the fall, from the creation of Adam to 1872, that is not the millennium proper, as it were, that we're talking about in terms of the great restorer due and the 1,000-year restorative period, although much of it is in there. So it's important for us to realize that Christ's millennial reign, or time's restitution of all things, began with the year 1874, not 1872. Adam fell into sin and death conditions in the year 4126. He was created in the year 4128, 2 years earlier. So Adam was created 2 years before the end of the sixth creative day then. 2 years before the end of the sixth creative day. God rested on the seventh day, and the rest coinciding with 4126 to 2874. So Adam was created 2 years before the end of the sixth creative day, which means that when God began to rest, as we read in Genesis 2:2, Adam had already been created. And that the year 4126 is the date of the beginning of God's rest, and therefore also the beginning of the seventh day, which being consistent in length with the other six creative days is 7,000 years long. So when we see then, brethren, that the time of Adam's fall into sin and the beginning of God's rest coincide in time, the first 6,000 years of this seventh day are the years of sin and death conditions. So then, 6,000 years from 4126 BC take us to the date 1874, the beginning of the 7,000-year period, or restitution Sabbath, which, when having run its course in 2874, will complete the seventh day, God's day of rest. Now, this is entirely consistent with the creative epochs or days, as they are termed in Genesis, and shows us that the earth's everlasting jubilee will begin in the year 2874, when Christ turns the kingdom over to God at the end of God's day of rest. For recall that each creative day is 7,000 years long. Now just 2 years before the end of the sixth day, we repeat, Adam transgressed and lost for mankind his first estate. Now, this was 41,998 years from the beginning of the first creative day. 41,998 years from the beginning of the first creative day. At the beginning of the seventh day, which was 42,000 years after the beginning of the first creative day, God began to rest. And we go over our handout, this will become clear in a minute, if you're forgetting some of the dates now. We've already noted that chronologically, this was the year 4126 BC, and that the first 6,000 years of God's rest day end with the year 1874, the beginning of the time's restitution of all things at the hand of the great physician. So we therefore note that when the 7,000 years of God's rest day are complete, mankind will have been restored to his first estate. And that this will be at the end of 49,000 years to the year, the 7,000 years of God's rest day having fully transpired. Now from this point, mankind will be ushered into the 50,000 year period, which we might call the Jubilee of Earth, which will be the kingdom prepared for mankind from the foundation of the world, as we read in Matthew 25:34. But now, brethren, let us look at the handout. You can go to the first page. It's a two-page handout, and this will just help with some of the dates in our mind. It's really just trying to adjust the 2 years, really, and to understand clearly when the seventh day began and what the millennium is and where it began exactly in 1874, not 1872. So that's really the purpose of this set of addition equations here. So let us note mathematically, then I'll read this and we'll go through it together. Let us note mathematically how 6,000 years from the creation of Adam terminated in 1872. And how, on the other hand, the 1,000 years of restitution did not begin until 1874. 6,000 years after Adam's fall into sin, thus. It's simply stated here, brethren, 4128 plus 1872 is 6,000. That's not a problem. Thus is represented 6,000 years from the creation of Adam. Okay. But now, we notice on our chart 4126, here we have 4126. Plus 1874 also equals 6,000. Thus is represented the 6,000 years of evil from the fall of Adam, the reign of sin and death. Then we look at the next portion. We're adding now the millennium to this. 4126 plus 1874 plus 1,000 gives you 7,000. That's God's day of rest. Thus is represented that he, God, rested on the entire seventh day, Genesis 2:2, and this includes the 1,000 years of restitution under Christ's power and authority. The scriptures have shown us from many angles that the times of restitution began in 1874, and hence 6,000 years back of this date take us to 4126, the year that Adam sinned, and not the date 4128, the date that Adam was created. We see then that the beginning of the seventh day of God's rest began in the year 4126. Continuing through the handout here, let us also notice how this harmonizes with the length of the creative days, leading on to the Jubilee of Earth. First six creative days shows to be 42,000 years. To the end of the seventh day, that's another 7,000 years, the seventh day being made up of 7,000 year periods, 49,000 years. And then on the other side of that, Adam was created 41,998 years after the beginning of the first creative day. He falls into sin 2 years later, or 42,000 years after the beginning of the first creative day. This is the end of the sixth creative day. So we see that the seventh day includes the 6 days, or 1,000 years, of evil, as well as the 1 day, 1,000 years of restitution. And it can now be seen that the year 1874 begins the millennium, the times of restitution of all things, which God has spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets. This times of restitution will end with the year 2874 AD, After the 49,000 years are over, the Jubilee of Earth will begin. The 50,000 year will commence with the year 2875. This will be 49,001 years after the beginning of the first creative day, the first year of the 50th thousand. The first year of the 50th thousand. So that handout might help to see the rather simple math there, but what for some of us might seem to be a hard thing to get straight in our heads until the simple math is done. And that was the case for me. Now that takes care of the first question in my own mind. I think I understand what Pastor Russell said in Volume 2 there regarding the 2 years and why it was a screw loose and how the millennium is different from the other word millennium he used, but in the context of from the creation to 1872. So now I have that clear in my mind, which is good. And I hope it helps to clear up that in the minds of any brethren who might have had a similar or the same question or concern. Now another important question in the minds of some brethren, in my own mind, I needed to review this and refresh it in my own mind, is not so much when will the millennial age end, because we already established that through the chronology and through all the things we've studied and received and been blessed by, but what will be its closing features? Not all of them, because we probably don't know all the closing features, but one in particular regarding the little season. Will the little season during which Satan is loosed be just before the end of the 1,000 years or just after the close of the 1,000-year millennial reign? Because in the volume, sometimes the pastor speaks in general terms, he seems to indicate that it is just before the kingdom is handed over to God that the little season takes place. And that, and on some scriptures and other things that were said don't harmonize with that at all. So we're going to determine in my own mind and yours, and maybe brethren already know this clearly in their own minds, and that's very good, regarding this little season, and bring out a few things that have been said in the scriptures and from the pastor's writings. Will the little season during which Satan is loosed be just before the end of the 1,000 years, or just after the close of the 1,000-year millennial reign? Now, in the sermon book on page 106, Pastor Russell said that, quote, "The clear declaration of the scriptures is..." Now I like those words because it was no longer a general statement, it was now really solid. "The clear declaration of the scriptures is that the close of the millennial age, at the close of the millennial age, the Lord will permit a brief period of liberty to Satan for the purpose of testing those who will have received knowledge and uplift to perfection throughout the millennial age." So at the close, but it's clear, but not clear enough. Because at the close to be, at the close is before or just after, but we'll see. Anyway, I'll go on with a quote here, forgive me. "To the intent," I better read that again because I want to get this all together in one piece. "The clear declaration of scriptures is that at the close of the millennial age, the Lord will permit a brief period of liberty to Satan for the purpose of testing those who will have received knowledge and uplift to perfection throughout the millennial age, to the intent that none of the human family or others shall go beyond that time or have eternal life except as they shall be in heart obedience to the Lord and His righteous requirements." Now, Revelation 27 and 8. We'll read that first, keeping what we just heard in mind. Revelation 27 and 8 reads, "And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea, when the 1,000 years are expired." Well, that's pretty clear. When the 1,000 years are expired, they're over. It says, "Brethren, when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations." Here we have the clear expression that it will be after the completion, the complete expiration of the 1,000 years, that Satan will be loosed for the little season of deception. This will be when the great mediator has finished the work of restoration and has turned the kingdom over to the Father, as we read in 1 Corinthians 15, 24, where it says, then cometh the end when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and authority and power, for he must reign until he hath put all enemies under his feet, etc. Along this line, the pastor writes in reprint 5776, and I quote, when they, that is mankind, shall have reached the pinnacle of perfection, they will be fully justified, or made fully just. And if they pass faithfully their final test, after the close of the millennial age, those are the words used, after the close of the millennial age, the reward of everlasting life will be given them. Unquote. Now similarly, along this line, Pastor Russell was asked a question in the year 1911 in the question book 423, page 423 in the question book. That's the year 1911. And the question was in reference to 1 Corinthians 15:24 and the turning over of the kingdom to the Father. It was, and I quote, will this turning over of everything to the Father be before or after the little season mentioned in Revelation, the 20th chapter, where we read that Satan shall be loose for a little season, that he might tempt the world? Now that's stating the question in a little different way. Okay? The questioner here is asking, will that turning over of the kingdom to the Father be before or after the little season? He says it'll be before the little season. So it's exactly the same answer, but stated in reverse. Now the pastor answered that the handing over the kingdom to the Father would be before the little season. Here's what his answer was. During all of that 1,000 years, evil will be restrained. Satan shall be bound and Christ will do his work completely of restoring. And then having finished his work, he will turn it over to the Father, and then all mankind being perfect will be under the control of the Father. Unquote. Now the test, just after the millennial age, will be a test of love and a test of loyalty. It will prove the degree of love and consecration that has been developed as a character in those who have seen and enjoyed so many of God's favors throughout the millennial age. Some who will have reached outward perfection will not have developed the inward perfection of heart or will, even with very favorable opportunity, and that seems awfully surprising. To me, at least. This is evident from the results of the test, as we read in Revelation 20, verse 9. Where it indicates to us in Revelation 20, verse 9, that fire comes down from God out of heaven and devours those that engage in this deflection. All not possessed of characters or wills in full absolute harmony with God's will must die the second death. Now the test at the close, and I wanted to get some information on the nature of this test at the close of the millennial age in this little season, because it seemed like an obscure thing, although I could see the logic of it. And certainly we don't have all the information we'd like to have, but we have some information. Now the test at the close of the millennial age is symbolically represented in Revelation 2:7-10. Where Satan will be permitted to attempt to deceive all, whose number will then be as the sand of the sea. But what proportion he succeeds in leading astray is not stated. Now the pastor suggests that the deception and manifestation of wrong and willful character, I'll read that again because I want to make that really clear. The pastor suggests that the deception and the consequent manifestation of wrong and willful character will be along the lines of chronological expectations. Along the lines of chronological expectations. And that was a little bit of a surprise, which I'd like to learn more about. But we'll go on with this. And we're going to quote from reprint 1773. And we know that we have problems sometimes amongst brethren with under chronological expectations as well. But we have been given quite a blessing in this harvest time in the volume of studies in the scriptures, and I know I can't improve on it. But anyway, we have the wonderful plan set up before us. But the trial at the end of the millennial age, he suggests, will be along the lines of chronological expectations. And I'll quote the pastor. We do not suppose that Satan and his followers will go up and surround the beloved city, the capital of the earthly phase of the kingdom, with any thought of war or with intent to use physical force. They could not be so foolish. After so long an experience with the power of God's kingdom, we surmise that they will err in their calculation of when the 1,000 years of Christ's autocratic kingdom will end, and when the dominion of earth will be restored to mankind in general, to be exercised as a republic. Now, miscalculating the time, they may feel that the rulers of that time, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all the prophets, are prolonging their rule unwarrantedly, and that surrounding the beloved city may signify a demonstration or an appeal for their rights. Such a demonstration on the part of perfect men might, after centuries of benefits and blessings at God's hands, would indicate that their hearts were not fully submitted to the Lord. Unquote. I found that rather interesting. Their hearts were not fully submitted, as demonstrated by their attitude toward what they expect to be transpiring, and their demonstrating along that line for the transfer of the kingdom. Now, along this line, the pastor suggested in reprint 1234 that immediately after the close of the millennium, the rigor of the iron rule, now after the close, the rigor of the iron rule would be relaxed, and that this would constitute Satan's opportunity to again deceive any who desire to carry out plans in opposition to God's will or the principles of strict justice into the idea that they could do so now with impunity. Under such a delusion, those who have not developed the inward perfection of the heart will manifest their real disposition. And these are the ones whom God by his law marks as unworthy of continued life. These, by preferring their own wills, shall prove their unworthiness of life, and together with Satan must be cut off or destroyed. Now, accordingly, we're shown in Revelation 20:7-10 that at the close of the millennial age, there will be a harvest time for sifting and separating amongst the billions of human beings then living, each of whom will have enjoyed a full opportunity of attaining perfection. The harvest of the millennial age will witness the complete separation of the goats from the Lord's sheep, as represented in our Lord's parable in Matthew 25:31-46, which we won't read now, but I suggest that brethren look up a reference in volume 4 as well, page 644, regarding the similarities of the three harvests, including the millennial age harvest, similarity of the Jewish gospel age and millennial age harvest. And that's one of my next questions, by the way, brethren, which I've written down already and I want to pursue. What are the similarities in the three harvests? Because here we have a harvest in the millennial age, and Pastor makes that comment in 644, volume 4, but he doesn't elaborate there, at least. So now our job is to find out what that's all about. So at this point, brethren, the separation of the goats from the sheep. At this point in time, the new covenant will have passed two of its stages of development, and the third stage will be just commencing. The first stage being the laying of the foundation in the satisfaction of justice. The second stage being the actual making of the covenant by bringing mankind into line with its provisions through the restitution processes. And the third stage of the new covenant, and the final stage, which will commence at the close of the millennial age, mankind being in covenant relationship with God. It will have taken all the gospel age and all of the millennial age to make this covenant. The sheep class of Matthew 25:34 will inherit the kingdom prepared for them from the foundation of the world. Whereas the goat class, he says in verse 41, "Depart from me, cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." So it seems evident that those who fail under the test of the little season will belong to this goat class, and those who have failed to develop a heart and character full of trust, unselfishness, and loyalty to God These ones will be the ones who fail. For loyalty to God and all of His ways implies the development of true godliness in the heart. This goat class, even though granted all the privileges, blessings, and experiences of 1,000 years of contact with righteousness, truth, and the Spirit of God, they render merely an outward obedience, but at heart have not come into harmony with God. And in this connection, we see that loyalty will be the great final test of the little season. Loyalty. Not perfection of human nature, for this they will have attained. And you can refer to a reprint 4881 to read more about that, brethren, 4881. Now evidently some of mankind will be deceived as to the result of the course they take. All who are entirely loyal to the divine law will perceive the error of the wicked. Those who are to harmony will see how they're erring. It will be because they have not come into fullness of heart harmony with God that they will be susceptible to failure in this trial respecting their loyalty. So brethren, evidently our time is up, so I will have to draw to a close. More could be said. I just want to mention one more thing and reiterate, as we stated earlier, that it seems possible that the temptation that will come to mankind, and I thought this is what is one of the really interesting points, will be the desire to take possession of the government of earth before it's fully turned over to them. And if this is true, since they will know that it is God's intention to turn the earth over to mankind when the end of 1,000 years shall come, they will be anticipating the immediate transfer of everything from the ancient worthies, who shall have been ruling as princes in all the earth, as we read in Psalms 45:16. Now when the time shall have fully come, they may be disappointed. And as we read in Revelation 29, that disappointment, of course, brings about what results in their encompassing the camp of the saints and this deception. And again, this shows the condition of the world and the condition of some in the world at that time regarding their disloyalty. I'm trying to give you an abridged version, brethren. It never works as well, abridging things. So, brethren, what we'll do is we'll just draw to a close by saying that the beginning and end of the millennial age are times of severe testing in the midst of a great blessing. It seems a strange thing that any should not properly comprehend and imbibe the proper spirit when the knowledge of God is so prevalent. The sifting and separating amongst the billions of human beings living at the harvest of the millennial age will be similar to the present sifting of Babylon, as we read in page 644 of volume 4, and also in this harvest time, and similar also to the sifting work in the harvest of the Jewish age. Let that be your question. Let us pray that we might and appreciate what is transpiring in our Father's plan, where we are now. And that we, as we have been especially blessed, let us also be especially concerned that we are indeed being transformed into copies of God's dear Son, by taking heed to ourselves and to the knowledge of so great salvation, and how solemn the warning of our Lord, "Watch and pray lest ye enter into temptation." May the Lord add His blessing.